Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Betsy Stark in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Big debate over birthright citizenship and the 14th Amendment after Senator Lindsey Graham jumped on the issue last month. Now words like anchor babies and birth tourism are flying. Should the way we define citizenship be changed? This hour on Point, who should be an American? You can join the conversation. Should we change our approach on citizenship? Should everyone born in the United States be a citizen no matter what? Or does that need to change? You can also comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Well, joining me first from New York is Julia Preston. She's national immigration correspondent for the New York Times. Julia Preston, welcome back to On Point.
Hi, Betsy.
Julia, let's start by taking a listen to the comments that launched this controversy. Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina on Fox News July 28th.
People come here to have babies. They come here to drop a child. It's called drop and leave. To have a child in America, they cross the border, they go to the emergency room, have a child, and that child's automatically an American citizen. That shouldn't be the case. That attracts people here for all the wrong reasons.
Julia, just start us off by explaining to us, what is Senator Graham complaining about and what does he want to do about it?
He was proposing to amend the 14th Amendment to the Constitution, which is known as the Citizenship Clause, and which establishes and I'll read the text. It says, all persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States and of the state wherein they reside. And Senator Graham, as part of a package that he's proposing to that would include legalization for millions of illegal immigrants, he added this new element that would, in his view, discourage future illegal immigration by making it so that the children born in the United States of illegal immigrants would not automatically obtain citizenship.
He's also talking, though, about this idea of drop and leave and birth tourism. What is birth tourism? And is the country being inundated by these so-called birth tourists?
Well, I think we need to distinguish here because the comments that you just played from Senator Graham are referring to a different phenomenon, which is the notion that there are large numbers of Mexicans and Latin Americans coming across the border to have babies specifically for the purpose of giving birth to a United States citizen. And I think also there's a corollary concept there that I think many Americans believe that people that foreigners are doing that to in order to make it easier for themselves to become citizens. So that's one concept.
He's not talking about the children of the roughly 10 to 12 million illegal immigrants already here.
Well, I think he is. But just to clarify, the other notion there is the notion of birth tourism. And most recently, that was raised in a very interesting article in The Washington Post about organizations that a kind of a real tour group that this was particularly people from China and from the Middle East who would come on legal visas to the United States for a very short term, specifically for the purpose of having a baby in a hospital so that they would have a United States citizen. That, I think, is a limited phenomenon. And that notion of birth tourism literally was what became the focus of the attention, for example, of the minority leader, Senator McConnell. He tried to take the conversation that Senator Graham started, this much broader conversation. I think Senator McConnell hoped that it would eventually just focus on that more limited issue of birth tourism.
So quite a different issue, as you say, from the broader problem of what to do about these 10, 12 million illegal immigrants already here. But let me ask you, why now? Why do you think this is happening now? There's a xenophobic kind of us versus them
element to some of this. How do you explain why we're seeing it happen now?
Well, Senator Graham is a conservative from a conservative state, and I think he added this element to his overall proposal, which includes legalization for millions of illegal immigrants, perhaps to shore up his credentials with conservatives in his state and conservatives who are participating in the debate in general. It was a very surprising thing for Senator Graham to do, since he has until recently been one of the prime authors of the proposal before the Senate to provide legal status to millions of illegal immigrants. And it did seem to be an indication of the rightward shift of the whole center of gravity in the immigration debate.
Let's bring two more voices into this conversation. With me from Arlington, Virginia, is Rosemary Jenks. She's Director of Government Relations for Numbers USA, an organization that advocates for tighter controls on immigration. Rosemary Jenks, thanks for joining us.
Hi, Betsy. It's great to be with you.
And joining us from Washington, D.C., Elizabeth Wydra. She's chief counsel for the Constitutional Accountability Center, a liberal think tank and law firm that defends the rights of immigrants. Elizabeth Wydra, welcome to On Point.
Thank you, Betsy. It's great to be here to talk with you all.
Rosemary, you don't think every baby born in the U.S. should become an American citizen. Why not?
Well, because there are two parts of the 14th Amendment. The first says all persons born or naturalized in the United States, and the second says, and subject to the jurisdiction thereof. If you look at the origins of the 14th Amendment, you find that that jurisdiction requirement was actually added to the original draft by Senator Jacob Merritt Howard of Michigan, and he proposed it specifically to make clear that the simple accident of birth in the United States would not be sufficient to justify citizenship. He said that the phrase subject to the jurisdiction thereof essentially means not subject to a foreign power.
So that's the legal justification that that you see for restrictions. But you also support restrictions because you think there are risks. What kind of risks do you see?
Well, first of all, we can't have a rule of law nation that ignores its immigration laws. If we have the laws on the books, they need to be enforced. If we're going to say that illegal immigration is wrong, then it doesn't make sense to say, okay, but if you do manage to violate the law long enough to have a child here, that child becomes an American citizen automatically.
Elizabeth, is this just a matter of enforcing laws on the books, as Rosemary says, or how do you see it?
Well, I think, first of all, the constitutional point, it's true that the 14th Amendment's first sentence does say subject to the jurisdiction thereof with respect to persons born in the United States. But I think with respect to that Rosemary's interpretation of what Senator Howard meant when he introduced those words is different. He was really trying to exempt people who, like diplomats, are not technically subject to the jurisdiction of the United States. So, for example, as we all know, there's this doctrine of diplomatic immunity. If a diplomat commits a certain crime, he or she may not be prosecuted in courts of the United States. And I'd like to get to one particular point that a lot of opponents of birthright citizenship point to show that it was intended to exclude children of aliens born on U.S. soil. And Senator Howard said that the amendment would apply to all children born on U.S. soil, except persons born in the United States who are, quote, foreigners, comma, aliens, comma, who belong to the families of ambassadors or foreign ministers.
Well, we could have been having this debate for a long time. I mean, this kind of disagreement over how to interpret this in terms of jurisdiction and to whom it applies is not really the heart of the matter, is it? I mean, what is it, Elizabeth, that you think is prompting a movement to try to restrict the way we look at the 14th Amendment now?
Well, I think it's very troubling. You know, one of the great things about our Constitution is that it was meant to place the conditions of citizenship above the politics and prejudice of the day. And I think that some of the politics and perhaps prejudices of today are infecting this debate. And that's a problem. It can perhaps prompt these problems that we're experiencing today, maybe should prompt some legislation. I think that no one would deny that there are problems with our immigration system. But let's not mess with the Constitution and start tinkering with the genius of our constitutional design.
Rosemary, is this politics and prejudice at play?
Well, first of all, I would say that this debate over birthright citizenship did not just start when Lindsey Graham spoke out. This has been a debate for decades now. Legislation has been introduced in the House of Representatives, every Congress, for at least the last five or six. And so this is not something new. This is something, I mean, obviously, we didn't have illegal immigration when the 14th Amendment was adopted. We didn't have tourism when the 14th Amendment was adopted. These are all much more recent phenomenon.
But Rosemary, do you think these birthright babies pose a threat to Americans?
A threat to Americans? That term doesn't really make sense to me. It's not a matter of them presenting some particular kind of risk to us. It's a matter of, are we a nation of laws, and do we respect all of those laws? And if we don't, then we need to change the laws. And a correct interpretation of the Constitution is not something that we should be afraid of. It's something that we should explore in a rational debate with the facts, not with politicization. And
okay.
I grant you, Lindsey Graham is...
Stay with us. All right. Stay with us. We're talking about birthright citizenship and the new debate over the 14th Amendment. This is On Point. This is On Point. I'm Betsy Stark, in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking this hour about immigration and citizenship. We're joined this hour by Elizabeth Wydra of the Constitutional Accountability Center, also by Rosemary Jenks of Numbers USA, and by Julia Preston, National Immigration Correspondent for The New York Times. Julia, where's the American public on this immigration debate? Polls do seem to show some support for restrictions.
Well, I think that there has been a continuing support for the idea of a change in the birthright citizenship practice, but I believe that it's based on a misconception. The term anchor babies is what people often refer to, and again, I think this is a notion that that Mexican women and women from Central America and Latin America are coming into the United States at the last minute in order to have a U.S. citizen child. And the anchor concept there, I think, is related to the notion that this would somehow help the mother or the parents also to become, get on a path to citizenship. In fact, U.S. immigration law does not allow a U.S. citizen child to begin to petition for immigration rights or benefits for their parents until the child is 21 years old.
So it's an arduous process.
That's a long wait, yes.
Well, let's hear from our listening public. Ron is calling from Jay, Vermont. Ron, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Betsy.
Hi. What's your comment?
I wanted to call and say that I don't think the 14th Amendment should be changed. The current administration and politicians really don't have the faith of the people, and to change such an amendment would be a travesty, really, because our founding fathers knew what they were doing.
Thanks, Ron. Rosemary Jenks, what do you have to say about that, that we ought to approach changing the Constitution with great trepidation?
I absolutely agree with that, and there's no reason to change the language of the 14th Amendment. What we need to do is have the Supreme Court actually interpret the 14th Amendment as it applies to the children of tourists and of illegal aliens.
All right.
Which they have never done.
All right. Well, let's hear from another caller about the 14th Amendment. Jerry is calling from Cookeville, Tennessee. Welcome to On Point, Jerry.
Hi, Betsy. First, I would like to say that I find a lot of journalists today that the way that they look at the Constitution, I just find it amazing how they pick and choose. They had no trouble with the with the Second Amendment, where the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. It had no problem with that. Could possibly be overturned. But yet, something else in the 14th Amendment, it also says that, it says, nor shall any state deprive any person of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. And that was turned into, well, a right for an abortion. But that being said, I think that the 14th Amendment was written specifically, and the 13th Amendment, for after slavery, after that cruel practice of slavery. This was made so that the children of the former slaves and their descendants could not be shipped off to any other country. That's what that was. That amendment was written for, and it wasn't written by the founding fathers. I think a lot of people need to really look at what they actually meant. And I think that a lot of people, a lot of journalists today, if they would have been living 80 years ago, would have probably been working for the Daily Worker or the New Masses and drinking coffee in bohemian clubs.
Okay, thanks for your comment. So the Constitution is not a sacrosanct document, Elizabeth Wydra. In fact, our caller says it's one that that should be open to being revisited when the times change.
Well, you know, our founding fathers did write into the Constitution amendment process, but it's extremely difficult, and for good reason. I think that the picking and choosing among provisions of the Constitution, it's actually interesting that the caller mentioned that, because a lot of the people, like the Tea Partiers, who support changing the Constitution to get rid of birthright citizenship, I think are picking and choosing among the provisions of the Constitution. And I just wanted to say that it's not true that the framers of the 14th Amendment were only considering the children of slaves, of freed slaves, when they wrote the 14th Amendment. On the floor debates, you can look it up in the Congressional Globe of the 39th Congress, they specifically spoke about children born to Chinese parents in California, children born to Gypsy or Roma communities in Pennsylvania, even those who, quote, committed trespass on U.S. soil. So it's not true that it was just intended to give citizenship to freed slaves, although, of course, that was one of the major focuses of the amendment.
We're also hearing from you on our website, onpointradio.org. Sandy wrote in to say, abuse of the 14th Amendment needs to be stopped. According to the Washington Post, China provides wealthy persons with birth tours so that children will have access to U.S. services as citizens, although they may not live here. Also, there is no reason a child born of two illegal aliens should be an American citizen. Julia Preston, can you address this issue of restricting birth tourism without changing the 14th Amendment?
Well, to address the issue that this writer has raised, the notion, I think, behind the changing the Constitution to make citizenship not automatically available to the children of illegal immigrants. The idea there would be to curb, that this would be a way of curbing illegal immigration to the United States. It does seem that, leaving aside the vast difficulty of changing the Constitution and the huge political proposition that would entail, it does seem that there would be perhaps a torrent of consequences from this that might not end up at that point
Such as
reducing illegal immigration. For example, the notion here is that, for example, if a Mexican woman who did not have legal status gave birth to a child in a hospital in Los Angeles, that child would become, I guess, a Mexican citizen who would then be also an illegal immigrant at birth. And so you would very probably be creating a shadow population of children it would compound the problem that we have now, the essential problem, which is that we have probably 11 million people living in the United States who don't have immigration status.
Let's hear from one of our callers, actually from Los Angeles. Elizabeth, you're on point.
Hi. I just wanted to pipe in on what you guys were talking about earlier about whether you saw the birth of, you know, or illegal birth children as a risk to citizens. And I come from a family of immigrants. My mother's from Nigeria, my father's from Haiti, and they came to New Hampshire in the late 70s. And I think that I just have a brother and sister who just arrived from Nigeria this past week, but it's just taken 10 years to get them here legally. And I don't think that, you know, living in Los Angeles, my husband works at a hospital where you see a lot of illegals come into the emergency room with six children and have the doctors, you know, basically do a routine checkup, but they know that they get free care because they don't have to pay, but they won't be denied service. So I don't see it so much as a risk to American citizens in terms of security as it is using the resources that are a privilege that come with being here the legal way. And I think the argument gets mired when you just refer to immigrants. America is the land of immigrants. It is. But if you have free riders, you know, in the system, they're taking from everybody else. And it's a real problem. And I think it's, you know, it's really frustrating to hear the argument mired. It's just like they should be able to stay. If all the illegals that we have here are allowed to stay, then there are a lot of people who have already filed to come here legally who won't ever make it.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Elizabeth Wider, would your reaction to the economic piece of this, that this is about a drain on economic resources at a time when we have an economy that can't afford that sort of drain?
Sure. Well, I think, first of all, that that's something that could and perhaps should be addressed through comprehensive immigration reform. And, you know, I think it would be great if Lindsey Graham refocused his efforts on that as opposed to calling for repeal of the 14th Amendment. But I think it's also important to think about something that is lost in this debate many times, which is what would be in place instead of birthright citizenship if we were to do away with that portion of the 14th Amendment. And we would have to create an enormous bureaucracy in order to check that everyone, not just sort of, you know, folks who are, you know, quote unquote illegal immigrants, but everyone would have to prove their citizenship somehow. And that would create an enormous bureaucracy of folks checking people's papers, new kinds of papers to show that you're a citizen. So I think that in terms of overall economic impact, some scholars have argued that it would actually be a larger financial drain to try to recreate a system of checking citizenship if we took away the method of birthright citizenship.
I want to read a comment from another from our website. This one was posted by Joshua. I can't believe this country is turning so foul as to want to abolish the 14th Amendment. I really hope this movement dies a quick and undignified death. Rosemary Jenks, your reaction to that?
Well, I am not actually aware, except for Lindsey Graham's comments, which I think are very isolated. There is no movement to abolish the 14th Amendment. Again, we don't believe that the 14th Amendment even needs to be changed. It has all of the language in it to suggest that what we should be doing, and the previous caller, I think, was absolutely right, that we have to distinguish between lawful permanent residents and illegal aliens and temporary non-immigrants, they're called, technically. And there's no question that the 14th Amendment applies to the children born of lawful permanent residents.
But Julia Preston, there's certainly talk of holding hearings on Capitol Hill to talk about the 14th Amendment.
That is where this most recent debate about this came down, I think, which was that the Republican leadership decided to try and narrow the issue and to say that what everyone agreed on in the Republican leadership was that there should at some point be hearings to try and determine you know, what kind of a problem it would be, whether you would need an amendment, how big the problem of birth tourism is. And that was the outcome, I think, of this most recent debate over this. I did want to say one thing about the caller who spoke about the legal versus the illegal immigrants, which is I'm not aware of any of the proposals before Congress to grant legal status to illegal immigrants that doesn't require those legal, those illegal immigrants to, as they put it, go to the back of the line. I think that there's a obviously a great controversy over whether legalization should be appropriate, but within the people who do think that we need to go to some form of legalization, there's general agreement that that people who have been in the pipeline seeking legal status in the United States would go first.
Let's hear from another one of our callers. Glenn is calling from Stanton, Kentucky. Glenn, your comment, please.
Yes. My basic comment is that I don't believe there should ever be any benefit for breaking the laws, and clearly if they're illegal in their status coming here to give birth, then the child does become the anchor and they have gained a benefit for breaking the laws. Second point, briefly, is I was born to United States Airmen overseas. He's an American citizen. I was born on United States Air Force Base, delivered by American doctors, yet I had to be naturalized. I came to this country on a green card. I find that a little bit offensive that somebody can cross the border illegally, have a child that actually has greater rights than I did.
Thank you very much, Glenn. Elizabeth Wyja, a closing thought from you?
Yeah, I think that, you know, it's important to remember that first, the 14th Amendment was written because the framers of that amendment believed that providing citizenship to persons born in the United States without regard to race, color, or previous status of your parents or alienage was a long overdue fulfillment of the promise of an inalienable freedom in the Declaration of Independence. So we should be very careful before we start messing with that. And second, those who want to read the amendments clause so narrowly as to allow discrimination against U.S.-born children of undocumented immigrants or non-citizens are simply wrong as a matter of our Constitution's text, history, and purpose. And obviously, we don't have time to get into all of that today. But I encourage everyone to take a look at the facts, to read Supreme Court opinions, United States versus Wong Kim Ark, and to actually look in the Congressional Globe if you're interested in this, because we are not afraid of a proper interpretation of the Constitution. In fact, we welcome it because we think it furthers equality and freedom rather than restricts it.
And Rosemary Jenks, a final thought you'd like to leave us with.
Well, I have to agree with Elizabeth that what we need the court, the Supreme Court, to take a case that interprets the 14th Amendment as it applies to the children of illegal aliens, to the children of tourists, and that, I think, will solve the issue. And, you know, we don't need a change to the 14th Amendment. We simply need to interpret it in light of the framers' intent and current-day needs and what the actual language says. And we shouldn't be afraid of having that debate as long as we have it in calm, rational terms about the facts.
Julia Preston, do you think we're headed to a more narrowly focused resolution of the birth tourism issue?
I would be surprised if this actually comes up at all before the November elections. I think this was a kind of a political moment, and it when Lindsey Graham made his comments, and it did have the effect of bringing this issue into the sort of main frame of the immigration debate. But the actual practical requirements of either passing legislation or amending the Constitution or figuring out what would be the consequences of that, I think, are really too great for anyone to take up in the near term.
Rosemary Jenks, Elizabeth Wyja, thanks very much for joining us. Julia Preston, stay with us. This is On Point. I'm Betsy Stark in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking about the debate over the 14th Amendment and birthright citizenship. We're joined this hour by Julia Preston, national immigration correspondent for the New York Times, and I'd like to bring in one more voice to the discussion, David Winston, a Republican pollster and strategist. He's president and founder of the Winston Group. David Winston, welcome to On Point. Welcome back to On Point. What do you make of the Republicans taking on this issue so close to the midterm elections?
Well, again, I think at this point I wouldn't consider it a movement per se. I think this was just sort of a Lindsey Graham thought that sort of took everybody a bit by surprise. And given where he had stood on immigration before, there's some seriousness being given to thinking through what he's presented. I'm not quite sure where it goes at this point. I have to say, until he brought it up, I'd really not heard it at all on anybody's radar screen. So,
but
I think
it's
at
getting,
this point, go ahead.
But it's getting a lot of play now, and is it a winning play for Republicans?
The whole issue of immigration at this point is a very complicated issue. I want to go back to some of what your previous guests were talking about. And look, there's this fundamental conflict that exists that has not been effectively resolved by either side, which is why it makes it a very difficult issue. We're a country of laws and we're a country of immigrants. Those are two basic principles and values that people hold. Those are in conflict as a result of this particular issue. Having said that, immigration as a major issue at this point is while it's important, it's not jobs in the economy. And I have to say, anybody who's off talking about anything else besides jobs in the economy is not on the issue that's going to decide the election.
Well, you know, that I want to bring in one of our next callers. Sadiq is calling from Boston. And Sadiq, you think the downturn in the economy is part of what's behind this?
Yes. Hi. Thank you. Thank you very much for taking my call. Yes, why here, why now? Lindsey Graham and the governor of Arizona, they choose this time because they know the public will support this because of the downturn economy. And there is always someone to blame. And then another point I would like to bring here, please, is the white Americans, they will be the minority. And I know this conservative movement, they really want to, to take this issue in a different direction.
Thank you, Sadiq. Appreciate your call. Julia, what do you make of this notion that the downturn in the economy is pushing this issue forward now?
Well, I think that there are obviously huge tensions out in the labor market in the United States, and in fact, one of the hardest hit industries has been construction, which was an industry where many immigrants without status had made important inroads in roofing. And if you look at a state like Arizona, there was a great increase in the population of immigrants in Arizona in recent years because they had a big housing boom. And then we know what happened to the housing boom. And so that shift in the economy, I do think, is part of the reason that this debate has become so intense.
David, do you...
I think there's a parallel thing going happening at the same time, which has to do with the whole question of the rule of law, which is that we've had an enormous political vacuum because the federal government and the Congress have not made any a big step forward on the immigration issues. And in the states in general, there is a kind of a hunger out there for better enforcement of immigration laws. And so though that political mix, I think, came to a head in Arizona, where Arizona took a step with a law that was more harsh than what other states had proposed. And I don't think we can underestimate the impact of the debate in Arizona on the national debate. I think it really polarized the debate in a way that we hadn't seen before.
David, you agree with that?
I think Julia's point in terms of this whole sense in terms of enforcement and to some degree this whole situation that happened in Arizona versus sanctuary cities ultimately made the administration look a bit arbitrary. Why go after Arizona for deciding to pass this particular law versus sanctuary cities who decided they weren't going to enforce laws? It just seems arbitrary, which gets to, again, a value of the country. We have laws, and either you decide to have them or don't, and get to the public policy side of this. And the big problem, is, as Julia correctly points out, is there has been no political will in this city to figure out how to come to that effective compromise, because ultimately we don't really have an immigration policy at this point. And as a result of that, even if we did, we don't have the ability to enforce, but we don't have a real immigration. There's no sense of where this is going. Having said all of that, and again, I would just emphasize this point, where there are people directly involved who are quite engaged in terms of this issue, ultimately, when you look at the public and you look at what's the most important issue in deciding how they're going to vote, over half the country says jobs and the economy, and it's 1-2% say immigration, maybe a little bit more, but it's way down the list. And
right.
So,
but it may be one of those wedge issues. And I want to read to you from a listener on Facebook. This is from Matt, who writes to say to us, the fact that, quote, moderates like Lindsey Graham and McCain are advocating this is testimony to the extent that extremists have taken over the Republican Party. The Republican Party is trying to lead this country down a dark road, and I fear for the weak and powerless. David, Republican Party headed down a dark road on this one?
First off, again, I go back to the initial statement. I mean, this is a Lindsey Graham thought. This is not any proposed policy by anybody in a leadership role. I think it was a surprise given what his previous stands had been in terms of dealing with immigration. And so, I mean, like I said, until he came up with that, I had never even heard this issue emerge anywhere. But also having in terms of where this election is going to get decided, again, these issues, and I have to say that this is going to sound a little harsh, but people want to hear you talking about jobs and the economy, and one of the dynamics that the Obama administration found themselves in terms of talking about health care, they were on the wrong topic. People engage in terms of immigration. It's an important issue, but it's still the wrong topic. And I think that as campaigns move forward, that the center of gravity here is with independence, and the center of gravity here is jobs and the economy. And while there's engagement in terms of interest, it's still not the decisive issue.
Julia, do you see a risk of, to the extent that we might end up, this thing has legs, and that there may be some kind of hearing on Capitol Hill about this, or continued conversation about birthright citizenship? Is there a risk that this backfires for the GOP to the extent that it's playing to its conservative base on this?
Well, I'm not sure what you mean by backfire, but I do think it's surprising that the Republicans raised this issue about the amendment to the Constitution that gave equality essentially to African American descendants in this particular year, and particularly when we have our first African American president. It does seem like it's a slightly dissonant a proposal. And the other issue that's interesting is how this is all playing with Latino voters, who are significant voters in a couple of states that will be hard fought this year: California, Arizona itself, other states in the Southwest. And I would actually be interested in hearing how David thinks that this kind of proposal is playing with the Latino voters out there, and whether he thinks they're significant.
David, you want to make a quick comment on that, and then I want to get our callers back into this.
Yeah, and I guess there was a period under George W. Bush where support for Republicans got up to the low 40s, had moved from high 20s, 30, and went as a result of the whole discourse over immigration, which just sounded very negative in terms of a lot of these Latino communities. That support ended up dropping back to about originally where it was, about that 28 to 30 range. And going to another caller's point, the Latino population is clearly a growing population within the country, and so ultimately those are numbers that are not necessarily positive going forward for Republicans, and they're going to need to address. But having said that, it's not so much the substance as the sense of tone that needs to be addressed there. I mean, substance drives tone, but it was the whole nature of how the discourse evolved.
All right, let's hear from Carlos, calling from Boston, Massachusetts. Carlos, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Bexy. Thank you very much for this issue. I born in Costa Rica. I crossed illegal alien in Arizona. My wife, Melida, she's an anchor baby, and we are good citizens. My son died in Iraq in 2004. He served 2 tours in Iraq, and we got to know many, many, many people who are her sons and daughters in the military. We're speaking. The recruiters himself, you know, when they're going around asking sons and daughters, you know, to join the military, is a way to help the families. Why? Because these anchor babies go, and in less than a year, they can be as citizens and also help the families. You know, the Boston police here in town, every time they arrest somebody, they go to the process, you know, with immigration or checking status, you know, which is happening. And also, I hope someday we have a national ID, which is very important. And I hope people to respect in these hard times my accent, because a lot of people, you know, going very angry with this issue. And I think the people who run the country up in Washington, they are to take more serious about how we feel, because we've been attacked constantly. And I'm a Red Cross volunteer. My wife is a public service healthcare, and we do good things. I know a lot of families do good things. And in 2006, four-star General Peter Pace, he said, you know, the next military is coming from south of the border. Almost 19% of sons and daughters who went through Afghanistan, Iraq, 19% are Latino descendants. And it's very important to let them know, the rest of the country, how important we are in this country.
And we thank you for your call, Carlos. Thank you. Let's hear from another caller. Megan is calling from Savannah, Georgia.
Hi. I'm a liberal, and I love that this country is a country of immigrants, and I purposely found schools for my children that were diverse culturally and racially and all. But I've always thought it was foolish that the children of illegal immigrants could automatically become citizens, and I think there's an awful lot of people who think that as well. It may not be as urgent an issue as jobs in the economy, and it's probably not an issue that politically is going to work out in terms of making changes, but I do think it's just a foolish thing. There wasn't the problem with illegal immigration back when they made the 14th Amendment. It just seems like it's a strange thing to have people who break the law have their children be rewarded.
Thank you, Megan. Julia, do you think there are a lot of Americans who agree with Megan that it makes no sense?
I think there is, as I said before, support out there for precisely the concept that she articulated, which is it somehow seems not logical to people that someone who is not in legal immigration status as a parent would be able to confer or have a child who would automatically become a United States citizen. I think one of the concepts also that people don't understand well is that these are not parents who just arrived yesterday in the United States. In many cases, these are people who came to work. They've been here for many years. The figures show, the Pew Hispanic Center has shown estimates that about 4 million American citizen children have one or more parent who is an illegal immigrant. And often those families are mixed, so that you would have U.S. citizen children, you might have a legal immigrant parent, an illegal immigrant. And so untangling that whole a problem of, you know, of people who've been here for a long time and families that have mixed status, it's a very complex proposition that is not necessarily addressed by just eliminating automatic citizenship.
Let's hear from one more caller. Amanda is calling from Owensboro, Kentucky. Amanda, welcome to On Point. What's your comment?
Thank you, Betsy. I'm just calling. I'm a very liberal Democrat, as some other people have said, but I am not for illegal immigration, and it disturbs me that I always hear the proponents for this to call them undocumented workers. And, you know, we need to call them what they are. They're illegal, and I don't believe that the 14th Amendment allows their children to become citizens. I think that's just overreaching. And it disturbs me that so many hospitals in this country have had to go under because of all the medical attention that a lot of these illegal immigrants have received. And, you know, we as a country are having to pay for it. I'm for them to go into their country and making their country as great as ours is. And then, you know, I think we should assist them in growing their country like other countries helped us. And that's my comment, and I appreciate being on today.
Well, we thank you for your comment. Thanks for calling, Amanda. David, give us your forecast of what you think happens next with this birthright citizenship issue.
Well, my sense is, again, the reason this has emerged to a large degree is in large part because there hasn't been any political consensus sort of developed up to this point, and so issues like this continue to emerge. My sense is I don't think it ends up going anywhere in particular, except sort of, again, sort of igniting another element to this argument. Ultimately, the challenge that still exists is how do you come up with balancing? And I think you've listened to a variety of ideologies here, again, liberal Democrats saying they're having difficulty balancing the value of country of laws, country of immigrants. And I think ultimately it's going to take some political consensus here, and consensus, not necessarily one side driving a view. And until that political consensus is developed, issues like this on an emotional issue like immigration are going to continue to emerge as people try to find some other piece to sort of look at to solve the problem as opposed to addressing the core problem, and that is balancing those two values.
Mm. Julia Preston, a final thought from you on where we head next.
Well, I think that sooner or later we have to address square on the question that is driving all of these comments and all of these proposals, which is, what do we do about 11 million people who are living in the United States who don't have immigration status?
Julia Preston, thank you so much for joining us. David Winston, our thanks to you. You can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. And you can follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. I'm Betsy Stark, in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.